The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Great to have you for another week. Lots more interviews from the recent NRB. Let's get to it. Neil Mammen. And here we are today with Neil face to face. It is great to see you.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Well, this year's NRB, obviously tonight as we record this, President Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump.
And future, we hope.
And, well, there you go, is going to be speaking tonight. And they've already set up everything. All of the security screening is in place. This place is hopping today, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be really crowded because I've heard him speak once before at NRB, and it was, you couldn't even get in. It was just too...
Well, I'm wondering what it's going to be like for all of us. I mean, we're supposed to be able to get in, I suppose, since we are registered and we're there.
You have to get... Well, the thing is getting through security. That's the longest line.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
And
well,
once you get in, don't think about getting out because you'll never get back in again.
You can't get back in. And it is seriously one of those things where I was at CPAC when he was there in Orlando, and I didn't even bother to try because it was too crazy and too restrictive. So that could be what happens tonight. Tell me about your involvement now with Every Black Life Matters. What's going on with that in these days of 2024?
So a lot is happening on that end. Kevin just come out with his third book.
Kevin McGarry,
my co-founder, good friend, wonderful man of God. He's come out with his third book. And it, I'm going to get the name wrong because it's just come out. I haven't even seen a copy yet. I've seen just the electronic version of it. It's, I think, To Be Free to or A Slave to Be Free or something like that. It's
cool.
It's a great title, and it's, you know, Kevin's a master of all these catchy phrases. His last one was DEI in 3D, which was about the problems with DEI, diversity,
equity and inclusion,
or as I like to call it, DIE.
D-I-E. You believe all of that, you're going to die.
Yeah, basically. And then I'm working on a new book. I did the children's book of Does Every Black Life Matter? And I'm actually working on my new book, which is audaciously called How to End Racism in America. Yeah, so, obviously it's people are like, what? No. But no, I actually believe that we have a solution to racism because... So far, we've been addressing the wrong problem. The problem we've been addressing racism is we've been asking if Americans are racist.
Yeah.
And the answer is no, Americans are not racist. Then why are we seeing the problems of black plight? Why are we seeing the disparaging? Why is it that, and I'll give you a clue to it, why is it that when you see a black kid between the ages of 13 and 29, you're afraid? Well, there's a good reason for that. It's because the people who destroy the black family created that perception. Why? Because they created the gangs. They created, I mean, not on purpose. You could argue that they had no intention of doing that, but
yeah,
it was the offset of that bad policy that happened. So I go through all this, and then I come up with a solution. How do you change this around? And it turns out it's actually quite easy, but it's going to take a few decades to get there. We just have to systematically get there.
Well, I know I've not read this, obviously, but I would think that it involves the family.
Absolutely.
I think that's a real critical part. And the fact that so many in those areas of the blue states where black families have long been, sadly, and very heartbreaking, really, to see how many are growing up not even with a nuclear family at all. So often it's the grandparents that are raising the kids.
Yeah. So when people say, what is racism, what is why the black, we have black plight, and the answer is yes, but it's not the racism you think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the racism of today. It's
right.
The racism of the 1970s and Lyndon Johnson, who sent out 100,000 social workers into the black community to purposely remove the father from the home.
I don't know if you were here to hear James Ward the other night.
No.
He is a black pastor, and he really made a bold statement that would go along with the fact that he made the choice and believes that all African Americans should do the same, to make a choice to not believe all of this stuff that's being heard about racism, and realize that we have a wonderful country that can be free from it. And yet the narrative that's out there, it's not like we're discovering this about us. It's like people are being pointed to it.
Well, so you should always ask yourself, why would anyone want to create racial strife in America? You know, I always tell my wife, if something is really stupidly obvious, but people don't accept it, you should look at why the narrative is there. And the narrative is always going to be something insidious. And so one of the reasons why we believe the narrative is being pushed is to destroy America from within through racial strife and things like that. And this is not new. In fact, in the 50s, G. Edward Griffin said exactly that in a video you can find online, a black and white video of him. He says, and he goes through all the phases of Marxism attacking America. Mm-hmm. And the last one he says, and they want to start this racial strife. And they've been doing that ever since. And you've seen that through all the times that they've been in there. But I want to jump off another topic here. One of the problems that we have is that the church is now going woke. The church has started buying into this CRT business. They've started buying to, that we have churches that are hiring diversity officers. And I heard of one church in Portland that Portland has probably, a 3% black population, hired a diversity officer. You hiring a diversity officer. How many black people in your church have come and said, well, I feel that your church is racist, right? And why is a diversity officer going to solve this problem? He's not. He's actually going to cause more problems because he's going to start splitting the races. The last thing you want is to differentiate the races. You want the races to merge together. I mean, as a person who's born in Africa and who's not white, I can tell you the less you pay attention to my color or my ethnicity,
right,
the happier I am, right?
That is exactly right.
So because I don't want to be different from you, I want to be like you. I came to America to be like an American, not to be a different kind of an American. So one of the things that we are seeing in the church is that they're going woke. Well, how do you find a church that's not going woke? And if you are going to a woke church and you're giving tithes to it, you're perpetuating this problem. You're creating the problem. Not only that, critical race theory is the antithesis to the gospel. The gospel is, you say, you forgive people, everyone is equal. Critical race theory says, no, we're broken up into an oppressor class and oppressed class. And by the way, the oppressed class is morally right, whatever they say. Well, the Bible says there's only one moral authority,
that's right,
and that's Jesus,
that's right,
Christ. That's God, right?
That's
so
right.
You don't get to be more right than anybody else. It's not your truth or my truth. It's God's truth. It's not your morality or my morality. It's God's morality.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a problem. So how do you get out? If you're in a woke church, how do you get out of it? That's number one. And two, how do you, let's say you move and you want to find a church, how do you end up not going to a woke church? I mean, you could go to a church for 6 months before you realize that they're woke.
Now, you said CRT. A lot of churches are moving into that. Well, so if that's one symptom or characteristic, what would you look for to determine if your fellowship, your church, is going that direction?
If the pastor comes out and starts apologizing for all the racism that they've done in the past. Well, you haven't done racism. I mean, I don't know any church that's been pushing racism. Now, yeah, maybe America did in the past, but as a church, what have you done that's racist? I mean,
right,
who are you apologizing for? So if your pastor starts doing that, I'm saying run away from that church, right? That pastor's just mouthing the words, unless he can show you a specific racist incident in your church, which I'm betting never happened. Right? You know, maybe somebody claimed about it. Well, then maybe you have something to talk about. If somebody hasn't had any of those claims, then why is your church coming out and making that? So all you're doing is you're playing in the hands of the critical race theory people. And this is not biblical at all. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, what is your church's view on abortion? What is your church's view on transgender mutilation of kids? What's your church's view on homosexuality? Same-sex marriage, are you going to? And then here's the other one. What's your church view on having pro-homosexual people teach Sunday school or teach Bible study or teach whatever it is? I was at a church once. I got kicked out, I'm proud to say.
You're glad to say I was kicked out.
It's a badge of honor, right? I was at this Presbyterian church, a large Presbyterian church in Silicon Valley. You can guess what it was called. And I preached against homosexuality. And it was just something that came up in the topic. I was talking about morality.
I can see that.
And one of the table leaders, one of the Bible study leaders, was gay. And he complained and got me kicked out. So I was supposed to do a 5-week series. I got kicked out. I'm like, this is a badge of honor. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But we also then were able to say, look, this church is not biblical. And they said, well, this is not our, you know, because you want to go to the website and they're like biblical on their website. But the people in the church are not obeying. Listen, either they're not reading to the website, and why are you appointing someone of that who is pro-gay, specifically against what you say on your website? Why is he a table leader or a Bible study leader? This is the kind of thing that you have to be very careful for. So what we did is we created a gentleman named Roger Ellswick, who runs a number of car dealerships in Texas, a very godly man, and has determined that America is going to go downhill. We need to support the biblical churches. So we created a website called mychurchfinder.org.
Wow.
Mychurchfinder.org. Not .com, because there's a .com out there that we haven't been able to get.
Mychurchfinder.org.
And now what you do is when you go there, you have we have tests for pastors. There's 45 questions that the pastor has to answer. And the if you fail the basic test, so the first 15 questions are your biblical theology. And if you fail that, you get a would not recommend right off the bat. So you're off, right? I mean, you'll be listed as a would not recommend church.
Mm-hmm.
If you pass the biblical questions, and the biblical questions are like, do you believe in the deity of Christ? Do you believe in that Jesus is the only way to salvation? So basic Christian questions. Do you accept the doctrines of the Nicene Creed? Even if you're a non-creedal church, do you believe in those doctrines? You know, so you get past that. And if you get past that, then you're a C church. You're going C, mm-hmm. just to pass the bar. Yeah, because you might be biblically sound, but what about the next step? The next step, and this is part of that's what's destroying America. Do you teach CRT? You know, if you're in a biblical church that's teaching CRT because they're ignorant about it, well, that's not a good church. So do you teach about CRT or do you teach against CRT? Do you teach against abortion? Do you teach against the dangers of homosexuality, the dangers of transgenderism? Do you teach about these things? Are you aware? Then you're culturally aware. So then if you pass that, then you are a B church. You're culturally aware and biblically sound. Now, how do you get an A rating? To get an A rating, it's not enough that you say abortion is bad. It's not enough that you say same-sex marriage is bad. You have to do something about it. Well, what do you have to do about it? Well, you have to change the laws. So to get an A rating, you have to be biblically sound, culturally aware, and politically active. So what does that mean? That you have voter guides, you have voter registrations, you have you talk about the issues. You say, look, here's the governor. He's vetoing this thing. You gotta go in there and you gotta send him an email. You know, here's a voter guide that we're gonna go. We have churches in Idaho that not only send voter guides, but they send people door to door handing out those voter guides saying, this is important, you gotta vote for this. And guess what? While they're doing that, they say, can we pray for you? And they've led people to the Lord just doing that, right? So these are the A churches, and that's where you wanna be. You wanna be an A church. You want your church to be an A church, you wanna go to an A church. So how do you get your... We just started last year. We only have about 215 so far all over the country. I think we're in 43 states already. But what we want is we want to get 10,000 churches on there. So how do you get your church? If you're a pastor listening to it, go to mychurchfinder.org and do the survey. If you're not a pastor, but you go to a good church and you want your pastor to be on there, there's a link that says Ask My Pastor. And you just click on it. You put in his email. You put in your name and your email. We send him an email. We send you an email. Now, of course, we know pastors are really busy. You'll probably ignore the first two of them, so we'll send them reminders. And then you can go talk to them one Sunday. Say, Pastor, I sent this email. I haven't seen you on the list yet. Can you tell me if we're going to get on the list? Because maybe your pastor isn't an A pastor. Maybe he's a C pastor. Maybe he's a would not recommend pastor. Well, guess what? You want to run away from that church. You want to go to a church that's biblically sound, culturally aware, because you got to prepare the culture against godlessness, and then you got to do something about it.
What do you see happening, turning away from churches for a moment, in our political sphere with those that are representatives? You know, America, we are a representative republic, yes. Not a democracy.
Not a democracy, yeah.
And so many people, I think it's just a lack of understanding,
yeah.
Because they can't really articulate the difference. But you've got the news media, you've got politicians that are constantly using the term democracy,
yeah.
As if that describes our government, yeah. Our form of government. It does not.
It does not at all. In fact, the democracy, the founding fathers hated democracies. They called them mobocracies. In fact, they said democracies have never survived. They've always killed themselves. They've committed suicide. A democracy is the 51% tyranny over the 49%.
Yeah.
And supposedly, Benjamin Franklin said, a democracy is two wolves and a lamb deciding what's for breakfast or for dinner. Right? And to which somebody responded, yeah, and a republic is a well-armed lamb.
That's, I think you're right.
This is the thing about what we have: democratically elected representatives, but we do not have a democracy.
Right.
The only thing that's democratically elected is our representatives. Now, here's what's fascinating. Most people don't realize. When was the first time in history that we see a democratically elected representative government?
Probably America.
No.
Okay.
No.
Israel.
Yes. But when? Not the Greeks, not the Romans.
Right.
But the Republic of Israel in Exodus 18.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when you said Israel, I thought you were thinking about this Israel. No, the original Israel.
The original Israel.
Right? Which we're hoping this is this is, of course, just the Jews and the Levites and the Benjaminites of the original Israel, which was the 10 tribes. Now we only have three tribes left. But that was the first time in the history of all mankind that we see democratically elected anybody and then democratically elected representative government. That's Exodus 18. Go to Exodus 18. You'll find the origin of every single republic. Now, here's the tragedy. Every single nation calls themselves a republic. Even the communists call themselves
the Democratic People's Republic.
Yeah. Well, no, there's nothing democratic or republic about you. You're a communist fascist government, right? So what's the issue? The issue is that a republic is where you elect your representatives and your representatives decide the laws. Now, the problem is whose the laws based on? Whose laws are you going to base on? So you can't have just a democratic, because some people say, well, we decide the Romans had a republic, but they decided randomly what their laws were, right? So you can't have a representative Republican government unless you have some basis for your laws. So what is the basis of your laws? Well, the basis of your laws had not been, I always ask, we legislate morality all the time. So whose morality should we legislate? Yours, mine, Mother Teresa's, or Hitler's? And the answer is none of them. We only legislate the authority.
From the moral word.
Yeah, the only person that has authority to tell you and me what to do and Hitler what to do and the slave owner what to do is the Almighty Creator of God, and that's what the Declaration of Independence says, right? And so we can only legislate his objective moral laws. Now the question, of course, the next person will ask, well, which God? Is it going to be the Muslim God? Is it going to be the Hindu gods, 3,000 gods? Or is it going to be the Buddhists don't have a God, so they can't have a moral authority? Well, the answer is it's got to be the Judeo-Christian, biblically moral authority.
That's right.
Constitution.
And we have come so far from what our founders, who understood that, what they believed, what they taught, what they formed this nation to be, and it is that. And it's like our republic has sometimes has been referred to now as a becoming banana republic. That's not good.
Well, look at what they're doing to Trump. I mean, what right does the minute you start putting your political opponents into prison or trying to fine them because you don't like them, because they did anything bad and you try to frame them, that's a banana republic.
That's
You know where we got the word banana republic?
No.
Most people don't know this. It was the American government has not been good. Back in, I don't know what year it was, I think it was the teens in America, or before that, or maybe after that. In the last century.
Mm-hmm.
There was a conglomerate, it's what we call crony corporatism, a conglomerate that wanted to grow bananas in the South American countries. And the South American countries said, no, we're going to kick you out. And so we sent the U.S. Marines in there to take back that, and we put a dictator in.
Aha.
And it was the United Food Company.
Mm-hmm.
I think they later on became Dole, but
the original Banana Republic
created by America. But the whole idea was it was going to be created in some other country that we didn't care about. Of course, it was evil, but now it's just, what comes around goes around. It's just coming right back to us.
Neil Mamman is my guest. We'll be back with Neil for another segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
If you're a Christian business person and you want to meet people who want to do business with you, you need to join the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce. Why? Because the mission of the Christian Chamber is to build kingdom, business, and community. And it all starts with the Christian principle of building relationships. To learn more about the Christian Chamber and all the different ways you can get engaged with hundreds of other Central Florida Christian business people, visit cfchristianchamber.com or call 407-258-3578.
Back again with my buddy from Idaho, Neil Mammen, who is, he mentioned that every time you thought about me, you think about the back porch out there because that's where you are when we're talking. Yeah, that was pretty funny, man. I love it. I've never been to Idaho, but it's a beautiful area.
It's a beautiful area. Don't come in the winter.
No. Thank you. Remember, I'm from Florida.
Yeah, I know. Come in the summer. It's a dry heat. I love it. It reminds me of growing up in Africa because I was born in Ghana, but then we lived in Sudan, right on the edge of the Sahara Desert for about 9 years. Dry heat, really hot in the summer, but once you get out of the heat, you're fine. It was just, I enjoy it, because you're right on the Nile.
Yeah.
Very green on that side of the Nile, but you still have the dryness of the desert.
So you're born in that area.
Yeah.
And what drew you to the U.S.?
Well, I would watch all these movies on TV and all the movies, and I would see some really beautiful American women.
You were a future red-blooded American man. Then,
and I said, I got to meet some of these women. America's full of these beautiful women. So I came here, and I found the most beautiful woman, and I asked her to marry me, and she said, yes. So we have
three kids. Friend, is the American story, right?
It is, isn't it? You know, the most prettiest redhead I could find.
Oh, my word. Neil, that's a great story. I don't think we've ever talked about that before. Well, I know since you've been here, it's been like a constant explosion of activity for you.
Yeah, it's my first few years I was in Silicon Valley, started about four companies.
Four companies.
Yeah, well, none of them made me rich, unfortunately. We raised over $88 million in venture funding, and I can honestly say none of them failed because of my technology. They failed because our marketing people were unable to sell the technology. So I'm not very good at marketing. I just kind of, you know, the marketing guys will say, well, this will sell. I'm like, well, I can build that. Or do you have an idea about this? And, I would innovate. So I have a bunch of patents and stuff. But
all right, would you say that you're an inventor?
Yeah, I have at least 16 patents out there, maybe more. I can never keep track of them.
Wow.
But remember, when I was doing the patents, I was working for a company. Even if it was my own company, the company owned the patents, so I didn't own the patents. So when we sold the company or the company shut down, somebody would buy out the patents. So I don't have the patents with me. I mean, the last one thing that I did that most people would know is if you ever buy a TV that says Dolby Vision, I'm the hardware architect for Dolby Vision. So I did all the hardware design for the Dolby Vision TV.
Okay, that's pretty great. Now, you are also, with all the other things that we've talked about, you are the president of the Values Advocacy Council.
Yes.
And you, that involvement, it sounds like it's busy as well. I don't know how you find the time to keep all the plates spinning.
I don't watch any TV.
So tell us about that, VAC.
It's funny. I've invented TVs, but I don't watch TV. People, it was fun. It was actually even funny because when I was in the TV industry back in 1992, I didn't even own a TV. And I didn't, in fact, own a TV until I had my parents move to America and live with me. And then my mom said, hey, can we get a TV? I'm like, yeah, I guess.
You're a serious engineer then by trade, right?
Yes. So hardware design. Two of my companies were router companies. We designed the very first MP3 player back in 1989.
Wow.
So I and a friend of mine were working for a company. They owned the design. They owned the patents. But we did that very first one there. It was meant for satellite TV, but that was 89. So it wasn't until we got the iPod that it became huge, right?
Yeah, I remember the pre-iPod when the very first idea, it looked like a little, it was like a small little like cigarette lighter size, almost bigger than a USB stick.
Yeah.
But a guy had one of those in his hand, and I thought, what is that? I thought it was a remote control for something.
Yeah, but it was an MP3 player.
And it was an MP3 player. It had a little headphone jack and everything there.
So we designed the chip that went in there.
Oh, my.
And then later on, it went all to software. They just used a microprocessor for it. But what was interesting about that is that what it took to make that explode was Steve Jobs' ability to negotiate you being able to buy one song at a time.
Yeah.
Because the music industry refused to let you could buy singles, but to buy any song you wanted anytime, just one.
Right.
It took a Steve Jobs to make that happen, and that's what changed that whole industry.
Well, I know Napster played a role in all of that as well in terms of getting that kind of concept out there in the main force.
Yeah, because you're downloading just the ones you want and stuff like that.
And it really has changed, not all necessarily to the good, the music industry, because there's a lot of people that used to have an income now no longer have an income.
Yeah, but again, I'll tell you why I think it's a good thing is because then the record companies control the entire industry. And if you weren't a chosen one, you had no chance. So today we have a more of a...
The playing field is a little more even.
Yeah, and so now if you're really good, you can actually make waves without a record company. Record companies are useful, they're helpful, but you could actually... And you've seen like... what's that kid's name? Oh, gosh. He was on YouTube. He was playing all the songs and it became huge. What's his name? The kid, I want to say Jason, no, but it was the B.
I know who you're talking about.
Not Jason, but.
I know.
Yeah. Well, some of the listeners know who I'm talking about. But see, that would have never happened without this democratizing of the industry.
That's
I hate to
right.
use that word, but it really is that, right?
Yeah.
So that's
Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber, thank you.
Yeah, that's who you're talking about.
Justin Bieber,
And that's right. A lot of artists in the Christian world, Jamie Grace was found on YouTube by Toby Mac. And that's how she got to be a recording artist.
Yeah, well, look at the lead singer for Journey, the new lead singer for Journey. He was some guy in Thailand singing in a club. Somebody said, hey, you guys should listen to him, and they brought him in, and now he replaced Steve Perry. I don't know. Those of you my age would remember.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So let's go back to the VAC.
Yeah. So the VAC was started in 2005 by Pastor Dave Sawkins and Larry Pegram. And then their goal was to bring pastors into the fold to act politically. And that worked for about, I think, a year. And then the pastors just backed off and weren't involved. So they started focusing on getting Christians involved politically. So in 2015, the current president retired, and they made me an offer to come in as an interim president. I said, sure, I'll stay as long as until you find a new president. Well, they lied to me. They never looked for a new president. So I'm still the president of the VAC. And what we did is we sort of expanded the VAC from it. It used to be just adults. We started, now we're focusing on families, and we kind of grew it. During COVID, it exploded. Because of what was happening, people needed a place to go to, and we were at a church that didn't close down, so we're the only church in the Silicon Valley. Shouldn't say the only one, but one of the major churches in the Silicon Valley that didn't close down. All the other big churches closed down, and so our church grew from 250 people to 3,000 people in a matter of 8 months. And many of those were non-saved people who were coming to church because they were suffering from depression and things like that. So we were having baptisms, and 150 people would get baptized at a time. So it was a huge blessing from the Lord. But then around some of that infamy got out there, and I couldn't get a job in Silicon Valley anymore. You know, people would just Google me and they'd see my name. And I applied for a job at some of the big corporations that you know the names of. And I'd get all the way through the VPs, and everybody would be like, yeah, we want you on board. But then I would get a letter saying, or not only a letter, I'd get a call saying, hey, we're moving on from some kid who
You'd been canceled.
I'd been canceled pretty much.
That's right.
And I didn't believe it. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just old. But they were like,
No.
Then, So we moved to Idaho. We figured it's better not to have a job in Idaho than not have a job in Silicon Valley, right? And then I've been working on different projects then. But we moved the whole VAC. We kept it going in San Jose, and it's still there. But we also moved to Boise, Idaho. And we started getting really active politically, and with pastors there. And what the amazing thing about Boise, Idaho, is the pastors are willing to get involved. So right now we have 18 pastors signed up for something we call PLACE, Pastors Legislative Advisory Council. And what it is, it started with an idea, and I'm very hesitant to say God gave me this idea, but I don't think I came up with it myself. But I was sitting there with the five pastors, and I said, pastors, let me ask you this. Who's the moral authority in your church? Well, God. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, who has God appointed to be the moral authority amongst your church? Well, us. Okay. So who has God appointed to be the moral authority to be amongst your community? Well, us pastors. Okay. What about your county? Well, us pastors. Well, what about your state? And they looked at me blankly like,
wow.
Oh. Then I said, so why are you abdicating that responsibility to a bunch of politicians who probably don't even love God? In fact, they may even hate God. And they said, well, we've got to do something about it. And so we started the Pastors Legislative Advisory Council. We're up to 18 pastors. We need to be a lot more. So our job is not to go to the politicians and say, please do this, please do that. Our job is to go to the politicians and say, if you don't do this, we're going to tell everybody in our congregation about you. We're going to go door to door talking about this because God has appointed us to be the moral authority of this community, and we're taking that seriously.
Wow.
So these pastors have been out there. They've been putting out voter guides. They've actually sent their people door to door, and people have actually gotten saved because they give them a voter guide, and then they give them all that information, and then they say, can we pray for you? And the people say, yeah, and then people have gotten saved.
I always enjoy talking with you, Neil. You're a guy that puts his faith where your legs are. You're out there walking it out, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing that. And thank you for spending this time with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. And don't forget, mychurchfinder.org. Go to it.
My Church Finder. And then your books?
Oh, my new books, you can go to everyblm.com. It'll be out there in a couple months. But Kevin's books are up there right now.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
One of the reasons I love the NRB so much is I get to be involved with and exposed to ministries that are happening not just in the country, but around the world. And I've got with me right now Bob Burkle from EEM, and that stands for Eastern European Mission. He is the president and CEO of this company. They work and have worked for more than 62 years supplying Bibles and aids and teaching materials to surrounding nations. So I know you've got a big campaign coming up that you guys are always out there doing it. And I appreciate that for what you're doing, Bob, and welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me today to participate in this radio broadcast. And I'm excited to tell you about this new Bible for Kids campaign that's going to be launched starting the beginning of March of this year.
So tell us, go ahead and kind of bring us up to date as to how that will impact people who are hearing this.
Okay, giving you a little background and context on this, a number of years ago, we were invited by certain ministries or actual ministers of education in certain of the former communist nations in order to be able to bring Bibles and Bible literature into the public schools. And it was amazing. We were quite surprised, but they said, you know, we are responsible, that's the government talking, for the moral and spiritual education of our children. And we have looked at different philosophies out there, and we choose Christianity because that's the God of love. That's the God that we want our children to emulate as they grow up and become functioning members of society.
Now, Bob, I think a lot of Americans, they're hearing you talk like this, and they're thinking that wouldn't even fly here in the U.S.
Well, I'm quoting you from a meeting I had about 10 or 15 years ago in Donetsk, Ukraine.
Wow.
So in Ukraine is where we got this started in that particular country. And from that initial meeting and providing the materials to them for their public schools in what we call a Bible bundle, which included Bibles, children's Bibles, teens' Bibles, character materials, we've grown to been able to put Bibles in 3/4 of the public schools of Ukraine.
75% of the public schools.
That's correct. And we've done it in Russia to a lesser extent. We've put over 1 million Bibles into Croatia. We just finished up a program, 450,000 in Macedonia. Plus, we have other projects on right now in Romania and Poland and all these other Eastern European countries that used to be considered Soviet satellite states, including the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. Now, so I think a lot of people, again, when they hear stuff like this, they're going, why haven't I heard this before? And, you know, I think there is just obviously a lockdown from the media in the United States. But you're talking about government assistance now in Europe. And we're talking about countries that once would have been identified with Russia, with the communist state there, who are openly saying and inviting you and choosing Christianity because of the fact that it deals with God and His love.
That's correct. And specifically, they want the truth. And the truth is the Word, and the Word is the Bible. And our catchphrase in Eastern European Mission is the Bible. We want everyone to get it. We want them to get it into their hands.
Wow.
We would get it into their heads. And once it's in their heads, they go to their heart. And from there, they want other people to get it. And sort of it's a step and repeat kind of ongoing process. Now, let me define a little bit better what support means. We, as Eastern European Mission and our donors in the United States, provide the money to print, publish, and distribute. But what they do is they help us do the distribution. They, for example, after we deliver it to a central warehouse, they may take it out to the particular schools and identify the schools in order to be able to do that, and then actively encourage the materials being used. Quite honestly, we've spot-checked them a couple of times just to make sure that the materials were being used, and the answer is yes. And then on top of that, we have character programs where we are actually teaching school teachers, or actually students that are going to become school teachers, how to teach Bible-based character and ethics. And we've done this in Ukraine and other countries as well.
Who is the support behind you in the United States for this? How do you raise money for this?
Okay, typically we have individuals and churches. And so what we do is we go out to those individuals and to churches and basically tell the story and tell people about what we can do with the particular resources that we're giving us, given to us. And consequently, in the last 2 years, we've printed and distributed approximately 2 million Bibles per year, Bibles and biblical literature per year, to be passed out to these particular countries. So far, right now, last year we were in, 25 different languages in about 37 different countries.
Wow. That is really amazing. 36 different countries, 26 different languages. That is something. And you deal with young people through the Teen Bible as well.
That is correct.
So what is the difference in the presentation of that particular outreach?
Well, following the phrase that we use, the Bible, we want everyone to get it. We want to get it to them in both the language that they understand and the level of that they can understand. So, for example, we begin with coloring books. And so the coloring books allow the kids to see the different passages that are there. We quote a Bible scripture, and then we have line art that they can color in and actually fill in some blanks as far as questions. The next, we go from there, is sort of a kindergarten Bible, kindergarten, first and second grade, which is a Bible storybook. It's not the Bible per se. From there, we move on to advanced readers, possibly fifth and sixth grades, up to, say, 10th or 11th grade, and it consists of Bible stories with the context and the actual Bible verses that pertain to the story listed in there, along with colored illustrations, so you can see the story and kind of bring it to life. And then from there, we have the full Bible or New Testaments as well.
We'll be back with Bob Burkle from Eastern European Mission in just a moment. Also, we'll be hearing from Chase Capo, a specialist in AI. That's all coming up right here on Afternoons with Mike.
Join host Mike Gilland for The Shepherd at Work every Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m. You will be introduced to a marketplace leader that will help you learn to walk out your faith wherever you live and work. The Shepherd at Work is sponsored by the Central Florida Christian Chamber, building kingdom, business, and community throughout our area. That's The Shepherd at Work, this Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m.
Truly one of the most fun weeks of the year for me is the National Religious Broadcasters, which was held just about 2 weeks ago. And it is still so exciting to present some of these not yet heard interviews, like this one with Bob Burkle, who is with Eastern European Mission. And they have a ministry all over the place. Let's go back to that. You guys are doing a work that is so impressive in all of these countries. Listed among them would be Albania, Armenia, Austria, Belarus, Bulgaria, Croatia, all throughout that block. Like you said, a lot of these countries would one time have been part of the Soviet Union. And yet, Ukraine, we hear so much on the news about Ukraine. That's where you got started in this Eastern block of countries. And they welcomed you right in. Almost rode the red carpet out for you.
Well, think about it this way. Ukraine is the buckle in the Bible Belt of that area. They're very spiritual people, and they recognize that there is God. They recognize the Trinity. They recognize the importance of Jesus, and they want that. They want to continue that in with everything they're doing of the people that we're working with.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you to EEM. And Bob Burkle, who I've had here with me today, He also has a lot of responsibilities in your local church. I know you're a man of God that wants to see the Word of God go out, and that is the real source of joy for your company.
Yes. I can't think of a better thing I could do in my retirement than do this. It's incredibly fulfilling to see God's work every day, and the stories we could tell, and we will as we go forward.
What's the website for EEM?
Oh, you go to www.eem.org. www.eem.org.
That is so incredible. EEM.org. Thank you so much. Bob Burkle from EEM, it's been great to have you.
All right. Thank you for your time.
All right. And now we're going to jump to an interview with Chase Capo on AI, artificial intelligence.
Chase Capo, we've heard a lot in the news about AI. Not as many people, though, know about AI the way my guest today really does. You've embraced Chase. Welcome to the program, first of all.
Thank you very much, Mike. Exciting to be here at NRB.
You know, I think it's great to be here. I enjoy it. And getting to meet people like you, that's one of the reasons why I think it's so special. AI is something that I think a lot of people don't understand it. And like with anything else in life, that which we don't understand, we can fear. And I'm sure you would believe that that's what's happening with AI right now, right?
Yeah, certainly. And we look at AI as a new technology. And we look at technology as a thing God's given us. I think the Bible's got great examples of technologists, right? The Magi were some of the most trained scientists sort of their time. And we think they were a great model for how to use technology, right? They employed the latest learning and watching the stars, and then they put it to the end of adoring Christ.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do.
And they used discernment along the way.
Amen.
They took a different route home.
Yeah. Amen. And so we've got a global app that is interacting with people in 188 countries. We've had over 1 million messages get sent in. It's a free app. And then we have a technology tool for ministries and churches to use the same tech.
Amazing. So this, tell us a little bit about how it is that people who are listening to this radio broadcast today, and I'm sure that you do this time and time again, because this is still, for all of what we hear about it, there's probably most of it we don't even understand or know about the capabilities, the potential for good that it can bring. So when you talk to somebody like that, who really is coming in from ground floor, they don't know much about it, how do you start the conversation?
Yeah, so to answer the question, what is AI, particularly generative AI, text-based, not necessarily pictures, but it's pretty close to the same. I use the example of a librarian, and imagine some librarian happens to be a robot that has memorized everything that's ever been digitized, online, books, and you can ask this librarian, call it ChatGPT, why is the sky blue? Now, it could give you a specific answer from one particular textbook, or it can give you a probability-based answer word by word from everything it's actually memorized. That's really what generative AI is doing. It's turned language into a bunch of zeros and ones. Now, what we've done is taken some of that technology, but we've created our own librarian and trained it to be Christian. And it's not dependent on a secular librarian that's acting Christian, which is a bit of a difference there. And we've seen this Christian librarian give an answer like a pastor would versus maybe what you might get on like a Wikipedia or Google.
Oh, my goodness. And that sounds very exciting. And I think, again, a lot of what really makes people unnerved about it would be all of the potentially bad uses, thinking of loss of privacy, thinking of loss of security, what happens with the nuclear codes, what happens in computers. I mean, all of this. So there's a lot, though, that I'm hearing from you, as I've heard from other people, that we need to be a little bit more open than maybe what we are when it comes down to AI.
Well, not AI, but technology, right? Think about Gutenberg and the printing press, right? There's an argument to be made that led to the Protestant Reformation, or Billy Graham. if he didn't use radio, because at the time it was considered to be the spirit of the air.
That's right. It was a lot of criticisms even back then.
So we have an anonymous platform. We don't even know who's using our app. We know what city and state you might be in. But for our free app, we see people asking X-rated questions, Mike. After a million messages, I can tell you, people are getting more personal faster with our anonymous Christian AI than they are with most pastors.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
I mean, this is just off to some of the conversations, you know, that we see, again, anonymous on the back end, but, you know, what kind of pornography is okay? How do you know you're born in the right body? Do all babies go to heaven? And then you can really understand that those questions I'm thinking about are followed up by some really heart-wrenching stories, and people start to interact with this like an interactive prayer journal. And so we've programmed our technology to act like an entry-level spiritual director that'll point you to certain scriptures and point you and encourage you in fellowship, because it's trained on the Bible, and the Bible encourages fellowship and reading the Word.
You know, I heard years ago that we need to learn to separate issues. And what you're talking about is not just technological breakthrough, but you're also talking about a cultural thing that a lot of people are living today, even sadly in the church, who are asking the very questions that you've just rattled off right there for us. And so that's a separate issue, isn't it?
Yeah. Again, another, I can just speak of examples. There's a prototypical Bible study leader asking questions on 2 Peter 1, right? Reading this a couple weeks ago. And it's got the Greek list of virtues, you know, knowledge, self-control, goodness. I might be out of order there. And he's asking, okay, what questions can I ask my group? What's this mean in the Greek text? Because it knows Greek and Hebrew. And then in the middle of this whole thing, he asks, is it okay to watch pornography if it's of my wife? And then just keeps at planning the Bible study.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of gave me the
just
feeling.
Just going right back to normal.
Yeah, this guy had been sitting on that question for a little while.
Wow.
And, didn't feel safe to ask it.
So AI and children,
yeah.
What needs to be considered for young people who are coming up? Maybe they're raised in the church, but obviously they're not really settled on a lot of their faith yet. What concerns do we all need to have about that, and how can we use this for their good?
Yeah, great question. First is maybe addressing it from the initial perspective you brought up of fear. Saying, I'm going to keep my kids from AI is a lot like saying, I'm going to keep my kids from the internet, you know, in the 90s or 2000s. It's probably not going to happen. AI is going to be ubiquitous. It's the next leap forward. And so there have already been hundreds of thousands, millions of questions like what I've already articulated. False premise-based question. What kind of pornography is okay? They're teenagers and middle schoolers even are going to ChatGPT to ask moral, biblical issues, and that there's got to be a Christian response to that. And so we view it as shining light in digital darkness. So what I would encourage parents and even high schoolers out there is to ensure you're getting your AI answers, particularly on moral, ethical, faith issues from Christian AI that's aligned to the scripture and truth.
Well, that's a great answer. And again, everyone is hearing about this. This is something that we need to embrace. Like you said, the internet was a fearful thing for a lot of people and maybe something that was shunned. The use of cell phones, another example. But we're living in a day where we've got to know what it is, because it's not going away, right?
No. In fact, it's just going to continue to increase. In fact, there will very likely be, as is what we sort of see as the future, apps may go away, and you may just have a personal assistant that'll use all your apps. And that digital door greeter of a church or an organization will be able to answer anything for that organization at scale, and make it personally applicable, because that AI has memorized everything that organization has.
That's the whole thing about this that is so crazy, because you talked about that digital robot that's memorized everything in the library about every subject, and yet in a real way, computers are moving so fast that all of that information can be assimilated and then just kind of spit out into a document that you've just given very few guidelines to. Write something on this, this, and this, and you've got like every volume of book in the universe at the disposal of that writing.
Yeah, that's why maybe the second part to the answer I just gave you about AI is going to be universal and everywhere. We definitely see this being fractionalized and built for biases, right? So you could very much have a conservative or liberal-leaning personal assistant that's going to shape the facts in a certain way that really just already contributes to what you believe. And so, unless you maybe want an unbiased one, which is, you know, there's no such thing as an unbiased robot. It comes with the values
that's
of the creators.
That's right. It's written in. It's programmed in. Is there a moral problem to AI or the concept?
No, not the concept. I think we are dangerously close when we start to bring all human technology in under one roof. That to me starts to sound and feel like a little bit of like Tower of Babel. But God's not surprised, and God, you know, Isaiah's clear. He makes the chariot maker, right? And he makes the blacksmith maker, and we're not to withhold from this. This is, again, like our magi. How do we use this to adore Christ? God's not surprised here.
Mm. This is very exciting. Tell us about how people can learn about you and your organization.
Yeah, so if you look us up in the App Store, iPhone or Google, it's Free Bible Chat, or you can just search it online at BibleChat.ai. That's our landing page for the app, and then we've also decided, we've had so many people asking for introductions, and we wanted to put this in the hands of ministries. So if you go to faithassistant.com, you can book some time with me and we can talk about it.
That is so cool. Chase Capo, I wish you the best, man, in everything that you're doing with this. And we need people like you to help lead the way for all of us, because this is a new frontier.
Thank you, sir. You know what? We just don't want to repeat the let's not use the radio for 10 years out of fear, right?
That's right.
We got to be hungry to share the gospel.
Well, I think you've helped me along the way as well. Thank you so much, Chase Capo. And we'll give us that website one more time.
Yep, BibleChat.ai or faithassistant.com.
Well, there you have it, learning more and more about AI every week, and I hope you are as well. And that's about all of our time today. Thanks for being with me. Hope to see you Wednesday at Driver's Mart as we're giving away certificates from the Ramsey Show, the Smart Tax Coupons. Hope to see you there. That's 2 to 6 at Driver's Mart, and that is on the east side of Orlando. Have a great day.